Welcome to our Monday Night Memories series, sponsored by Nate Barrett and the good folks at TwinCitySuperstore.com. Two of the best people I know in the world. Nate's one of the best people I know, too. But George Faber and Ralph Taylor, George, we all kind of go way back, but it wasn't all that long ago. We're not going to say it was all that long ago, that 1969 season, because that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Purdue's trip to the national championship game, the Final Four in 1969, and what a, at least for me at the age of nine, it made a big difference in my life, because I believed in this team about as much as any Purdue observer could possibly do. And it was exciting to watch. Led the nation in scoring as a team. They fast break with a capital F. They beat, they went 13-1 in the Big Ten. And played UCLA, who was a dominant national power at the time. Had to play them twice in the regular season, once in the course of the national championship game, and played them very well, especially in the regular season. So we'll talk about that, but I want to start with George Faber. Starting, I don't know, well, you were a power forward at all of 6'5", could run like the wind. And you were just George King and Bob King's kind of player, a guy that would set screens, would do what he was told on this team and play a role. And looking back at that lens of a few years ago, what a memory it is. And what's some of your biggest takeaways from that experience in the 1969 Final Four?
Well, it was a phenomenal year. We were very fortunate to have a lot of great players with Bill Keller and Rick Mount and Herm Gilliam and Chuck Babis, and it was pretty awesome. And we had to open the season. I was a sophomore that year, and we had to open the season at Pauley Pavilion against UCLA, because they had played the dedication game the year before for Mackey Arena.
Right.
And so my indoctrination to college basketball was playing in Pauley Pavilion against UCLA. So it was a great season. You know, we had a lot of fun. The game was different than it is today. Obviously, no 3-point shot, shot clock, no dunking. So it was a little different. It was a lot faster. A lot of games, you know, 80 to 100 plus points. And but it was a fun year. And I think the thing I remember the most is Mackey, and where you try to go into the huddle and try to communicate with one another, and you couldn't hear yourself talk when you were 3 feet away from one another. So it was a great, great experience.
Yeah. Nate, fire away. You can ask Ralph a question or go, whatever else hits you, floats your boat here.
Well, guys, good to be with you. I was thinking about, I want to know from both of you, any memorable speeches that your Purdue coaching staff gave you before a big game that season, or any phrase that was a key one in practice throughout the year that stands out to either of you, maybe lead off, Ralph.
I think one that George, because I'm having trouble remembering, but Coach Sexton always had this memorable line whenever we're on the road. It was, and George, I don't know if you remember what he used to tell us. It had something to do with the effect of after a victory, say, let's get out of town or something. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember Coach George King giving any fire and brimstone speeches. George might.
No, my most memorable line that I can remember was give the ball to Rick.
Yeah. And you did that. You both did that. You were smart enough to do that. But, you know, the one of the great stories of that team is obviously Rick Mount, who was a junior that year, and Big Ten's most valuable player, first team All-American. But always, and I'll start with you, Ralph, the job, you guys have both been successful in business and in your lives, but learning to get guys like a Bill Keller and a Herman Gilliam, who were most valuable players the year before, if I was co-most valuable players, to buy into the team concept and let Rick do his thing, let Herman do his thing, but try to make that all work. And Ralph, give me your memories of that dynamic and the job that George King did as the head basketball coach.
I think that year, that was probably one of the most important things that George was able to do was to give, to convince Herman and Billy to sacrifice for the greater good.
Yeah.
And had they not been had they not been agreeable to doing that, I don't think we would have been as successful as we were that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with Ralph. I think, you know, if you take and put Herman or Bill on another team where everything evolved around them on the offensive end, no telling what both of those guys could have done. They were to sacrifice and know that, you know, the number one asset that Rick had was his ability to shoot the ball, and to try to capitalize on that for the entire year. It was pretty awesome. And, you know, the, when you hear about role players, people, you know, it's just like a business. You have people that fit certain roles, and that's their skill set, and you try to maximize it. And Coach King did a great job with that team of being able to fit people into certain roles. I had an advantage because I was left-handed and Rick was right-handed. So when I was on the left side, going over to set a screen and handing the ball, it was just kind of natural. I handed it to him with my left hand and he shot it with his right.
Well said.
And, you know, I might also add, Alan, to what George's saying. I think the other thing was that, you know, Coach George King relayed to Herman and Billy the importance of sacrificing for the greater good. But I think Coach Bob King really, to me, was the greatest influencer as far as making that happen with Billy and Herman accepting that. And I think also, George doesn't really say it, but I think he also could have been a more explosive figure on offense had he had the opportunity to score more. So I think it was just a lot of sacrificing all the way around.
Yeah, George Favor still holds a record. I think he was still 12 for 12 against Michigan State. I know you don't tell your grandchildren that ever, George, but he still, I think, it had at least a share of the Mackey Arena record in a later year that you did, I think your junior or senior season. So that much I know. Nate, didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, who did you guys dislike in the Big Ten the most, that at least to play against, or who was the most difficult for that season?
Ralph, who do you think it was?
It was Ohio State, but I hated IU the most. But we beat them both times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it, at Ohio State in the old arena in St. John's, they put the football players right underneath the basket. It was like a high school gym. They were that close to the end line. And I'll never forget when I came out to warm up. I had my two front teeth knocked out a couple games before, and I didn't have a bridge yet from my two front teeth. And this one guy, big offensive lineman, he was screaming and hollering at me. And usually I didn't hear anybody from the stands when they yell. But anyway, this guy was hollering at me. So I told Larry Weatherford, I said, Larry, go over there and stand on the end line right next to that guy, and I'm going to throw you the ball. And do not dare catch it. It hit him up alongside the head. Needless to say, I got a few choice words.
That is the George Faber I remember. Those sharp elbows. Yeah, that was your only loss that year in Big Ten play, Ohio State. And really, probably, I would argue, and I'm the last to know, but the win at home against Ohio State in overtime was probably a game that kind of really put you guys, because remember Ohio State the year before had gone to the Final Four, finished third place in the Final Four. That was a big win in Mackey Arena, and I think they kind of beat up Rick, as I remember, like only had 20 points, and they were pushing him into the stands almost. So that that's interesting that you guys both mentioned Ohio State, but Jody Finney and Bill Sorensen, is it Bill Sorensen? Dave Sorensen was Dave a Sorensen. Player for him. And obviously Jim Clemens, a terrific player for the Buckeyes at that time. All right, Ralph, I always ask you this and I always embarrass you a little bit, but Mackey Arena, you guys both talked about, you know, Mackey Arena right now, and I don't know if you guys had a chance, you probably had a chance to watch Saturday's game against Indiana. unbelievable environment. You guys have both been in it and seen how it's even evolved over the years. But people don't realize what it's got started in. Well, in the first year it was open. And then in your year, that year that you go undefeated at home, only one of two times that Purdue's gone undefeated at home. But just what the environment was like. Students were there, like you said, the whole place. They used to announce the lineups kind of like they do now, where it was all Purdue at one time, the opposing team. And they remember they went back and forth for a few years, and now they're back doing that. But put that into perspective, Ralph. You were the crowd from coming off the bench. You were such a crowd favorite, and especially with the students. But what that was like to play in that environment with the students, even at that time, it was a big deal.
I think it was just a very inspiring situation where the noise of the crowd, if we were trailing or game was just kind of close, just the crowd noise just really invigorated George and Rick and Herman and others who came to the game. And I think there was nothing like it. And every time I hear the crowd roar today or years past, I think back that we were the originators of that with the crowds we had in the late 60s. So, but again, I think it's a tremendous home court advantage. And I know for sure teams to this day still get intimidated with that crowd noise.
Yeah.
It's like playing, Ralph, I don't know if you agree with me. It's like playing in a high school gym where the old Wigwam or some of the great venues, Newcastle, where is filled. There is no cloth in any way. Everything's concrete, and that's what makes it so loud. And obviously, when ESPN or anybody broadcasts, the very first thing they say is, "There's no place like Mackey Arena," and I believe that. I mean, Assembly Hall doesn't compare at all at IU to what Mackey is. It's probably the greatest venue in the country.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%, George.
I'm curious, guys, with all the experience that both of you and Ralph, you could lead off with what you've gained from your basketball experience and your life experience. If Matt Painter called you up and said, "I'd like you two to talk with the team before they go on into this journey into the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament," what are some of the things you would tell them?
I think one of the things I would start off with is I would let them know that we are the hunted, and we need to act like we are the hunted and go in and establish very early in the game, we're here to kick your butt.
Yeah.
Kick your butt throughout the game, and we will not wait around for you to come back at us. We just plan to stump you the entire game, so there's no drama at the end.
Yeah, I think history too, you know, here we are, 53 years later, talking about going to the Final Four. And, you know, there's certain things, certain games that you play where the, you know, Boilermaker faithful remember it forever. And I'm amazed when people sometimes come up to me and they'll talk about a particular play and, you know, it was 50 years ago. And so I think being able to have an opportunity to be able to be a part of something that is not done that often, and be able to then carry that with you for the rest of your life. That's something that's huge. And not being able to take it for granted, from my own situation, Ralph was in this situation in high school as well. When I was a junior and senior in high school, we were in the state finals in both years. And then I come to Purdue, and as a freshman, I'm not eligible. And then the next year, we're in the Final Four. And those are things at the time you don't realize how special those moments are. And then as you get older, you start to look back at it and realize it was a pretty unique and phenomenal experience. Alan, I go back to one thing you said about being 12 for 12. I will tell you that George King told me, he instructed me that I could shoot anytime I looked down and there was color on the floor. If I was in the lane, I could shoot. If I was outside the lane, I could.
I didn't say that they were all layups, George. I think they might have been, but they were. But they you were still pretty darn accurate as a part of the famed F Troop, George Faber, Bob Ford, William Franklin, back in the day, making a name for yourself. And then that, those were memories. All right, so George, I am going to pull a memory out because you are, if anybody is really responsible for, you know, that Marquette game was tough. The game, it was the elite game or the regional championship game at Wisconsin, played in Wisconsin's Fieldhouse. And, you know, it was the Al McGuire Marquette Warriors at the time. And they held the balls, tried to slow you down. You know, you guys led the nation in scoring, but you made the play of tipping the ball away, as I recall, at about half court. And when Purdue, you guys were pretty much dead in the water. I mean, if they would, they'd have made a couple free throws, it looked tough in that last minute before that. But is that one of the game plays that people still talk about, or what? Take us through that play of you being able to get that ball at half court and get a basket for the Boilermakers that turned the tide in that game.
Yeah, I was the guy who was guarding Thompson.
George Thompson.
He got 28 on me that night. And but one of the things that he did two or three different times when I was guarding him was when he'd reverse dribble, he'd leave the ball hanging behind him as he'd reverse dribble. And so when he came to half court, I made him do a reverse dribble. And when he did, I just reached around behind him and tipped it, and it went over to Larry Weatherford. And then we were fortunate on some missed free throws by one of the Marquette guys, and Rick nailed that shot at the end which was just totally awesome. And so, you know, the other thing too, Alan, at that time, there were only 32 teams in the NCAA. You had to win the Big Ten. A lot of people forget you had to win the Big Ten to go to the NCAA. Otherwise, you know, you went to the NIT. And so we were really fortunate, and Rick did his thing on that baseline jumper going down and falling out of bounds and throwing it in.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about this league this season, basketball that you've watched? As Alan alluded to, it seems like the Big Ten tournament will be wide open. And could it be one of those years where a team like Purdue that didn't end up getting a share of the conference regular season title could still make an incredible run once they get rolling in March, Ralph?
I think we can make a real good run in the tournament. I think I see a bloodbath happening with this tournament because I think, as evidenced by the last couple of weeks during the Big Ten, anybody can beat anybody. I think it's the team that has the mindset that we're just going to take no prisoners will be the team that comes out on this. As long as that team hits its free throw, then. In the last few weeks, it's been proven that if you don't hit your free throws, it can come back and present you with some very bad karma at the end of the game.
Yeah. George, how do you see it? Go ahead.
I agree with Ralph. I mean, these games are all going down to the wire. Lots of talent on all these teams, and particularly as teams get into the NCAA. You know, one of the things that I think this year that is remarkable is the number of games where teams have been down 15, 18 points and they come back and, you know, either just barely lose it or win the game. And it's that 3-point shot that's changed college basketball so much where, you know, 4 possessions and you can get 12 points. And that's huge. And, you know, we didn't have the opportunity when we were playing, there wasn't a 3-point shot. So you had to have 6, if you're going to get 12 points, you had to have 6 possessions to do it. And that's really made a difference, I think, in terms of the second half and leads going into the last 10 minutes and how quickly those leads can be erased if a team's hitting their 3-point shot.
Yeah, I think that's a true thing. I mean, look at Purdue this year, how many double digit leads they've had. And they've evaporated sometimes, and yet that's been a big part of it. I do want to get, as we continue with this, Rick Mount and the stories you tell about Rick to people that might not have seen him play, just to how good a shooter he was. And he did other things well too, but Ralph, if you were telling friends, family members about, they might not have seen him play, what do you tell them about Rick in terms of his unique ability to shoot the basketball?
Shooting wise, he was Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I can remember watching Rick in high school. Billy and I, Keller, we were playing Hinkle Fieldhouse, and the first game was 11, and they were playing somebody. We just sat there in awe of his shooting ability, and it was funny because the next day in practice, everybody's trying to emulate his fadeaway jump shot 28 feet out from the basket. And needless to say, Billy was the only one who came close to matching that. But Rick was just an outstanding shooter, could hit from anywhere on the court, just outstanding shooter.
Yeah. George, what about you? What do you, as you recall, and obviously you share some of the same love for hunting and the outdoors that Rick does, but put into perspective, what's that story you tell people about Rick Mount that resonates as putting into context how great he was as a shooter?
I think the most important thing in my mind is it didn't happen by accident.
Yeah.
You know, it's like stories you hear about Tiger Woods and the amount of time he puts in on the practice green. And that was Rick. I mean, just that shot where he would go to the baseline and be falling out of bounds. I mean, in practice, I would see him do that 100 times. Same thing with free throws. I think it's a testament to the work ethic that Rick had, that all of the accolades and great, you know, scoring that he did, it was a work of art, because he worked like crazy to try to improve himself all the time. And that's the number one thing, I think, you know, anybody that has children and is looking at what that child can do to try to improve. It's work ethic and practice. And it led to great results for Rick.
Yeah. And, you know, Nate, you got time for one more. Go ahead.
Defensive end during the Final Four, and we were playing North Carolina, the semifinals, Final Four. He was assigned to guard Charlie Scott, who was a great All-American at North Carolina. And Rick really did a credible job in slowing down Charlie Scott during that game.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nate.
Go.
I was just thinking, as George said that Ralph's old broadcast partner, Larry Closby, used to like to talk about practice after practice. Who's the guy that's going to stay in the gym and practice on his own time after practice, and what a difference that makes. But I guess for my final question for you two, I'm curious. I'm kind of growing up in the Troy Lewis, Todd Mitchell, Everett Stevens generation. I'd like to know from each of you how you chose Purdue.
Go ahead, Ralph.
there's a common denominator here, but yeah, I'm going to guess, yeah, but go ahead.
It was two things. My close friendship with Billy Keller.
Yeah.
We both had conversations, and we kind of both decided to go to Purdue. But the reason we decided to go to Purdue was somebody by the name of Bob King, who was assistant coach at Purdue, that recruited us. So he gave a sales pitch that was very good, and he was true to his word. And because of Bob King, I wound up going to Purdue.
Awesome.
And before George answers, I went because Billy Keller, Ralph Taylor, 1965 Indianapolis, Washington state championship team, quite an accomplishment. So George, the floor is yours.
Well, I echo what Ralph said about Coach King, Bob King. Actually, George King, I don't think ever saw me in high school. Bob was the one that I was from St. Louis, Missouri, and he's the one that came to the games and visited with myself and my folks. But it was pretty much down to three teams when I was I played football and basketball. I was a linebacker in football and had a lot of offers both directions, but it came down to North Carolina, Kentucky, and Purdue. And one of the things I did not know who Rick Mount was. Everybody in Indiana did, but I really enjoyed the people. I felt like they were sincere, honest. I really look forward to Mackey Arena with a brand new arena. And I'm so glad. I feel so fortunate to have made the decision to become a Boilermaker.
My last question, and I think is a guy that's really deserving, and you guys have watched him from afar and maybe even got to know him, is Matt Painter and coaching. Here's a guy that a different guy than Gene Cady, certainly a different guy than George worked with Lee Rose for a year or two when George was an assistant, and of course George King as well. But put him into perspective in terms of what you observe. And I'll start with you, Ralph, in terms of what he brings. He brings a lot of things as a head basketball coach, but what do you think is his best calling card as a coach?
I think one of the best calling cards is the fact that he is a straight shooter.
Yeah.
Let each player know their strengths and weaknesses. He's very fair. He's always well-prepared. He has no problem delegating responsibilities to the various assistant coaches. Win or lose, he's the very same. He goes to the press conference, tell you why we won or why we lost. And I think he's one of the best coaches. And this year, I'm hoping that all his bad luck in the tournament becomes good luck. No, and we wind up in the Final Four and we take home the NCAA championship.
Yeah, well said. George?
I think it's a testament to the Board of Trustees. And when you look at Gene and Matt, and we've had two coaches in
42 years.
Yeah, and we've had two guys coach, and one is played and is a disciple of the Gene, and he's a class act. Just like Ralph said, you know, he's willing to be able to share with the press. Whether it's a win or it's a loss, I know the players respect him, and I feel really great to be able to have Matt leading the program.
Hey, Alan, before you and Dave pulled out, I want to add one thing that we haven't talked about.
Yeah,
and I would just like to share. You know,
we got all day. This is the internet, so we got all day. If you got time, I got time. But go ahead.
Well, with our 68-69 team, you got to remember this was during the turbulent 60s.
Yeah.
And a lot of things were going on. And I think the team that year was one of the closest knit groups I've ever been around. And when you look at all the things that were happening in the 60s, it was a testament to us individually, but also to the coaching staff. There was really no, at least I didn't see any petty jealousies or any outside factors that impacted our close knit group.
Yeah, I think that's well documented and well said. Last words, I'll go. Nate, any else you want to add here? We put this to a close.
No, it's just a privilege, guys, because, you know, I've been going to that arena since I was 8 years old, and you guys are the ones that built it up and made it, you know, the legendary atmosphere that it has today dates to your era. And so, on behalf of everybody that enjoys going nowadays, thank you, because it starts with you guys.
No question on that. George, anything else you want to add? You get to get the floors.
I guess I'll just add to what Ralph said. You know, with the amount of divisiveness that there is in the country today, with racism and all the things that are thrown around, one of the interesting things is, I think in sports, when you have close teammates, you know, I never ever looked at Ralph as being black, and he never looked at me as being white. We were teammates. We were there to be able to accomplish the same goal. And I think sports does that. I think you bond as a team, and you don't care what the color of a man's skin is. You care, you know, you care, like Martin Luther King said, you care about the content of his character. And I think sports really brings that out, and it makes people people. And I've always really believed that. And I think it's a great thing that athletics brings to society.
Yeah, I think I'll close. Well said, both of you, and really, really important in these times. But I was thinking about that, just the fact that this is the first year, obviously, with a year of nobody in the stands. The best thing about Mackey Arena is you get almost 15,000 people kind of rooting for the same team. And we're not seeing that a lot in the world today, but it feels good to see that in Mackey Arena. And that has been a great, great part of this season for basketball and at Purdue and at other places.
Alan, I'd also like to thank George for helping to allow me to enjoy one of the best bonding experiences with the team that year. And that's when we went to UCLA, to Los Angeles to play UCLA. George didn't share that one of his friends, I don't know how he got to LA, he may have been living there, but he decided to take all of us on a bonding trip to the Playboy Club on Sunset Strip. Do you remember that, George?
And somebody said somebody was late getting back. Maybe,
hey, Ralph, maybe shut the door so Pam doesn't hear this. Hold on.
Yeah. I always heard the rumor that number 10 wasn't back in time or something like that, but I don't know if that's true or not. It may be an urban legend.
No, that's true, because when we got back, George, you want to tell a story what happened when we got back from the club?
I'm afraid to.
Well, we had all missed curfew.
Yeah.
And as we're pulling into the parking lot, there was Coach Bob King, and there must have been at least 10 of us that piled out of George's friend's station wagon. And Bob King and made a room check, and obviously none of us were in the room. So I know I was thinking about, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow morning when we go to team breakfast. We're going to be read the riot act, and we might get suspended. Then I got to thinking, well, wait a minute, Rick was with us, so nothing should happen to us. And lo and behold, the next day, there's no mention of guys being out past curfew at the Playboy Club. So that was
there a good experience. And a great story to boot. All right, guys. Hey, thanks so much. What a privilege for me as well to get to spend some time with you guys. And it's always a privilege to spend for me to spend time with Nate as well. Thank TwinCitySuperstore.com for all that they do for us. But also, we'll have this on the site. And it's really important, I think, that if you tell, you know, Purdue basketball's got such a great brand. You guys did a lot to build that. But the story of what's gone on in the past may foretell what's going to happen in the future, because that foundation was laid very much by you guys. So have a great rest of your Monday. And for all of you that are watching and listening, thanks for taking the time to do that. So have a great one, all. Thanks.
Alan, Nate, appreciate it.